Hey, Dan, welcome to the podcast. Thanks for doing this.
Thanks, Brian. Thanks for inviting me.
Well, this has got to be an exciting time for you and what you do over at HPE. We're just off Discover. I was out in Vegas. I think it was 110 degrees when we were out there last week. I didn't know it because I didn't go outside. I could see it through the windows in the few places that have them. But a ton of excitement. I don't think I've seen Antonio so brimming with joy over hardware quite like this before. In fact, it's kind of funny. The last HPE Discover I was at, he did a little Q&A thing, and I said, so what's it like being a hardware company again and not a cloud services provider? A little cheeky, I admit, but he smiled. He's an engineer at heart, right? So
yeah, absolutely.
All the action around the storage platforms, the networking obviously was a big piece of this with self-driving. They had a nice little hit with Kimmy and George on the F1 team talking about that, which was pretty funny. But fundamentally, like B10K and X10K were a huge part of the conversation. That's got to hit home for you.
Yeah. It's been a busy old time.
So reset it for us, for those that don't know, and I already abbreviated the name to the shortest possible version, but the B10000 and the X10000 was part of a storage refresh, if I can characterize it this way. I guess it's been, 2 years or so now, maybe even a little longer, to really consolidate HPE's storage platforms from a hardware standpoint to get onto a unified platform that could be deployed with different personalities, the B or the X, depending on the workloads. Now, I've probably watered it down a little bit, but provide some color on what's going on with that platform.
You got it right in a nutshell. I mean, it's the it's the same core hardware at the heart of it, and the B10000 is the block and now file offering as well. For structured data workloads. And over on the X10000 side, you've got the object and file workloads. So we're talking unstructured data. But at the heart of it, they are exactly the same hardware and the same disaggregated architecture, the whole scale out, scale up, add more compute, add more storage as you need it.
Yeah, I mean, that model makes a lot of sense. And from an HPE standpoint, pragmatically, with all the acquisitions, with all the different hardware, it gets to a point where it's probably untenable and quite expensive to maintain all those dedicated appliances. And to get to something like this makes a tremendous amount of sense.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you're involved in B10K though, right? So that's where you sit?
Yeah, predominantly. I'm in the technical marketing team and I sit mainly in the B10000 structured data space, but looking after data protection and cyber resilience. But obviously, when you're talking about data protection and cyber resilience, it spans the whole gamut, whether it's storage, network, compute, the whole lot. It's all part of the same data protection and cyber resilience story.
Yeah, so tell me about that, because we worked together on a deep paper on the cyber resiliency story, ransomware, all the protection, and we can get into that. But is that in block storage, is that what you're hearing from customers, that data security is maybe their number one concern? Because for a long time, it was performance. But I think we've kind of gotten to the point where the performance is there. The network can't, in most cases, really support like more performance. The box can do more than the network can handle in most cases. So are we on to really a security and data privacy and all that kind of concern?
Yeah, absolutely. That's definitely what we're hearing from customers and what we're driving towards as well. I mean, if you look at, you can look at it from two standpoints. I mean, malware attacks are happening at a daily rate. I'm not going to go through all the, the recent ransomware attacks. We could be here all day. But it's not just, exactly. And they're getting smarter, especially with, AI-powered malware and AI-powered ransomware gangs. It's not a matter of if you're going to get attacked, it's when. And it's not a question of how you're going to prevent those attacks necessarily. It's going to be a question of how you can recover quickly. to a good restore point. And there's also a second point to this as well, because it's not just a board level decision anymore. There's legal and regulatory requirements that require customers to have those cyber resilience strategies in place.
Well, that's the fun thing with Block, because you know, the industry gets all excited about the unstructured side of the house for AI and enablement, and that all makes sense. But fundamentally, an organization's most arguably prized data is that those database workloads, the old blocking and tackling that was done in the enterprise for the last several decades, right?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, historically, storage arrays have kind of been shoved in the corner in the data center. Thought they were, you know, everyone thought that out of sight, out of mind. They do their job. They were little workhorses, but don't necessarily need to think about them from a security standpoint.
So when you think about security, what does that look like in your customers' data centers? Because I think, you know, the IT admin roles, the storage admin roles have all shifted over the years. You guys are bringing more automation to, you know, the basic stuff like provisioning and bubbling up problems and remediation of like QoS issues and stuff like that. The classical storage admin role has changed quite a bit. And I think we're seeing a trend of more IT generalists in this role. But when you layer in the concerns around security and ransomware and malware, do you see organizations largely having teams just for that function, or does that fall in the generalist role and you have to do, as HPE, you have to do more to facilitate those guys?
I think, and I'm speaking in broad generalizations here, but historically security teams and storage teams may not have always spoken to each other. And what we're trying to do, especially some of the work I'm trying to do at the moment, is to bridge that gap between the storage and infrastructure side and the security operations center. I mean, fundamentally, from a HPE perspective, our messaging is, you know, it's threefold when it comes to data protection and cyber resilience. It's protect the array, so protect the actual fundamental access to the array, whether that's logical or physical. And protect the data that's stored on it, and that's through immutable snapshots and off array backups and remote copy. I mean, there's myriad options there that we could discuss, and also detect any threats as they come through in real time. Because so if we're piping all our log data up to the security operations center, they can see indicators of attack or compromise from an area of the data center that might historically have been a blind spot.
Yeah. So historically, it's been on the array side, on the B10K side, for instance. I noticed that I've been attacked because my data footprint's exploding because the data is encrypted. It's not compressing. And that's been like the most obvious sign that something bad has happened. Are there other triggers that you guys are looking at or thinking about, or is that still the primary vector to identify and acknowledge that something bad has happened?
Well, we're looking at things almost more from an endpoint standpoint, an endpoint perspective. So we're looking at using the audit log to discover, you know, failed login attempts or super users being created, or attempted deletion of snapshots, whether that's successful or unsuccessful, and any kind of anomalous behavior. So looking more at user behavioral analytics than necessarily, oh, you know, IO's gone through the roof.
Right. Well, I guess in that regard, you're able to get to it sooner, right? And that's always the goal, is to see something before it happens.
Yeah. And in addition to that, obviously, we've got the encryption detection for ransomware detection native in line with in the B10K as well.
Well, so talk about that a little bit. When we worked with you guys, and actually, I'll say two things. Like the project we did, and I'll link to that in the description so people can go check that out. We don't need to hit all of the nitty gritty there because there is an absolute ton about compliance and everything else. But the two things that stand out to me that are important here is, one, I like how in the work we did, it was sort of like a reference architecture. I feel like the ISG guys have gotten away from reference architectures and really focused on products in the last many years. I like how in this case, you really highlighted the benefit of the HP portfolio and how you can bring all of these things together. B10000, StoreOnce, Zerto, your additional security providers or software providers that can integrate in with these things. So, you know, I think that approach is really helpful to show customers like what you can do, which is neat. The other thing that impressed me that I did not know about, and we should spend some time on this, is that I think it's in Bristol that you guys have a lab set up that's got something like 100 or more strains of known bad stuff where you can purposely you know, exercise those against your data protection strategy. And that for me, I think is really neat and something that you should probably talk more about because I think that's pretty differentiated.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm quite proud to be part of the team that set up the what we're calling the Cybersecurity Center of Excellence. It's actually over in Fort Collins because that's where our labs team allowed us to build it because they've got, you know, hands-on control over it. But effectively, we've got an isolated environment that is completely separate from the HP corporate network, any other networks that we have access to. And we have a relatively small environment set up with multiple different hypervisors. So we're using HPE Morpheus and we're using VMware as well. We've got B10000 in there to run the workloads. And I think we're up to about 200 different strains of ransomware now that we've exploded. Yeah, I've got a really, really nasty folder of about 2.5 gigs worth of stuff. we're actually looking to expand this as well. So we did a load of testing straight after the R5 release. Unfortunately, we didn't have the environment set up beforehand. But we've taken all the data from those tests and we've piped that into improving the algorithms for the R6 release as well. So things that we missed in the R5 release, we'll pick them up in the R6.
So talk about that with R6 specifically. What's new there? And kind of, and also, what's the cadence that you guys are working on for updates for the platform?
For the ransomware specifically or just B10000?
Both. Let's cover off the whole portfolio there, or the whole suite.
I mean, every major release, I think, we're looking at about, I think it's down to about a yearly cadence or every kind of 9 months or so. But don't quote me on that one. That's out of my hands. but I mean, especially with the ransomware detection side of things, every release it's a continuous effort, really. We're constantly testing against new strains, new methodologies, new attack techniques to make sure that when the next release does come out, we're as good as we can be. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to say we're perfect because there's no detection method that's perfect. And that's why you need to implement a multi-layered detection approach. But, you know, we're also going to be testing this, the ransomware detection against Unified File, which has been enhanced in the R6 release. And we're also bringing in things to test with the integrated data protection that's in the R6 release as well to bring the store wants into the equation.
Right. Yeah. And that's a big part of it, too. Yeah. And you mentioned Morpheus. I neglected to rattle off VME was part of the environment we tested as well, which, I mean, I know it's not your product, but the VME is a fantastic alternative to, you know, the current disruption, could I say that, in the hypervisor space?
It's a diplomatic way of putting it.
Yeah, right. So I don't think when HPE made that Morpheus acquisition, it was obvious to everyone, certainly not to me, about the impact that would provide. And at the enterprise scale, yeah, there's a lot of obvious things there. But the ability to drive that down market through VM Essentials is really, really slick. We looked at that too last year, and that's a great solution as well.
Yeah, and I believe from the Discover announcements, there's a third tier coming out for that as well, and low cost licensing options, or you think free options, free licensing for a year for your VMware to VME transition.
Yeah, so a lot of orgs will take advantage of that because there just is a lack of professional options there. I know there's a bunch of choices, but there aren't as many that are enterprise ready and supported. Yeah. And the way that is, but I know it's not your product. We will not belabor Morpheus, but it does again go back to what I said before about speaking to HPE taking a holistic approach from a ransomware perspective on the entire stack and coming up with innovative ways to address these concerns everywhere.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, obviously I'm a little biased, but I think we're the only vendor out there that can offer that full stack from compute to network to storage and to including the hypervisor and backup layer as well.
Yeah, well, you know, the network was a big part of the conversation, so that's clearly,
I can imagine,
increasingly important conversation. So let me let you get into B10K specifically, since that's that's your most favorite child. You talked about things like snapshots. Walk us through the process of some alert is triggered. Now what?
Okay, so there's actually been some improvements to the usability and the kind of quality of life in the B10000 in the R6 release. So if a encryption event is detected, we historically just created a alert snapshot, and that was a point in time. It would include encrypted data, so it's not really a recovery point. It's there for forensics and post-incident analysis.
Okay.
What we've introduced in the R6 release is the ability to not only create that alert snapshot, but also automatically increase the retention time of every snapshot that's related to that volume. So it can automatically harden your immutable snapshots that are already there and extend the retention time on those to allow you a greater opportunity and a bigger window to find a viable restore point, because that's one of the biggest issues as well. If, you know, we can restore from a snapshot from 2 minutes before the attack.
Right, but if it's still in there, then.
Exactly, that's the big problem.
So that's an automated process. What other automations are built in here, or even, you know, are there others that customers are asking for? Like, this is great, but if it could do this, it would be even better. Get into
there's
what
also
else
the I think yes, it is coming out in R6. I'm allowed to talk about it.
This is why they should. Yeah, this is why they shouldn't let some of you guys talk to me, because I always try to pry out the results that you're not quite ready to speak about. All right, but if it's in R6, let's go.
It is. It's good. It's okay. I've written the documentation on it. So there's an automated security hardening feature as well. And that goes through and takes the work that we've done for the secure technical implementation guide, the STIG, which was released a couple of months ago for the B10K. And it automates a lot of that process. So you can create a configuration that you can then export from one array and import to the other. So you've got a standardized security posture across your fleet. And you can run regular audits against that security posture. And if there is a deviation from your baseline, then it will fire off an alert. And hopefully you've got your B10K pushing security and audit logs up to your SOC, and it'll all get picked up in the same place.
Yeah, consolidating that information is you mentioned it earlier on, but you know that's a big deal in terms of the operational efficiency of what you're doing here too.
Absolutely, and to tie back into the legal and regulatory side as well. I mean, if you look at EU regulations like DORA and NIS2, the NAS framework that's going under, it's going to have some additional clauses put into it in the UK. There's regulations in Australia, Singapore, across the world. In various US states as well, they all require a rapid reporting of cyber incidents. And, you know, they also require robust audit logging and everything like that. So from a regulatory and legal perspective as well, not just from a resiliency and incident detection framework, it's even more important.
Well, I mean, they don't care about your resiliency. They just care about the having the reporting and understanding that if there is a situation that took place, right?
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned NIST and DORA, and without diving too deep into the regulatory and compliance issues, anyone that's in an industry, healthcare, finance, whatever, understands that. But I think we're seeing an expansion of the requirements of these regulations that a lot of organizations that historically aren't regulated will be subject to, whether they know it or not. Is that a real concern, do you think?
Absolutely. I mean, historically, as you said, it was predominantly like finance and healthcare, but it's hitting every business. And it's not just the legal obligations as well. Cyber insurance are wanting you to be able to prove that you can, you know, keep clean copies of your data. You can provide, you know, traceable audit logs. You can have a disaster recovery plan that is not just on paper, but you've actually run through it. You know, you've done a demo and you've made sure that you are able to recover your data properly. And, you know, from an insurance standpoint as well, that's key.
Are you seeing that as you go down the stack? I'm just trying to delineate between what's a big enterprise problem and what's, you know, a mid-market or an SMB problem. Do you see that as being kind of a universal truth that these requirements and insurance policies, is that going to be common through all sizes of businesses, do you think?
Yeah, pretty much so. I think the requirements from that side of things are becoming more and more strict, and that's affecting every business. It's not just affecting the big guys at the top.
So taking away your B10,000 hat for a moment and just speaking more generally about what's going on in the industry, what are some things that every org can look at today to make sure that they're thinking about these things? Or like you said, a DR plan that's never tested is no plan at all. But have you found some common themes that would be just universally applicable to all organizations, especially smaller ones, because I think they struggle with this more?
Yeah, absolutely. The NIST Cybersecurity Framework 2.0 is a really good place to start for any organization, because it breaks down the cyber resilience strategy, if you will, into key areas of govern, identify, detect, protect, respond, and recover. And it's, without going into too much of the nitty-gritty, because I don't want to turn this into compliance soup, but it creates a standard language that means that everybody from storage to security to, you know, HR through to your governance, risk, and compliance teams through to your board level, they're all speaking the same language if you're talking NIST, and everybody can come together and be talking about these issues and they're on the same page.
Well, it's funny, in the paper we did with you guys, we actually broke it out that way in the sections to try to really, I mean, you're talking about common language, but really trying to get to the point where we're saying, like, here are all the components that you need to be concerned about and what they do and why, in a sort of not quite a dummy's guide to NIST security and such, but trying to lay it out in a common framework. So it was, made me smile a little bit to hear you break it out the same way. So that's a good starting point, but that can also be a little cumbersome or scary if you're not used to that. What else is there at like a real fundamental level that you see organizations aren't doing that they could to at least elevate their posture a little bit?
I think it all goes back to ensuring that all the data from your entire data center, that's, you know, network appliances, endpoints, mobile devices, if they export logs, your storage arrays, everything is pushed up to the security operations center, because that gives you a holistic view of everything. And when you look at modern SIEMs and XDR platforms like CrowdStrike or Elastic Security, they've also got the AI tools in place to kind of analyze that data as it flies in. So you're not just getting data from everywhere. It's actionable data from everywhere.
So talk about that a little bit too, because I think a lot of orgs look at something like CrowdStrike and think that's a big enterprise solution. It's too much. It's too expensive. It's too hard to implement. what's the easiest way, do you think, to get started with a solution like that?
I mean, the way I got started in learning about this kind of SAEM world was using some open source solutions on-prem. If you don't want to go for the big enterprise guns, something like Greylog is a really good open source, very powerful on-prem alternative. It's easy to set up, runs on pretty much any Linux flavor, and it will ingest from any number of sources.
That's good.
I mean, there's multiples out there. Well, Greylog was the first one that came to mind.
No, it's good because I think we've got to show the market that there is alternatives and what the whole scope of possibilities looks like. You're talking about on-prem. Do the rules change in the cloud from your view?
No, to be honest. An attack surface is an attack surface, and they need to be secured accordingly. And also, yeah, again, telemetry data needs to be pushed to wherever it needs to go.
Well, I think sometimes we look at the cloud and some organizations just assume that AWS is providing security or Azure or whomever and is doing that work as part of the services. That's perhaps a flawed assumption.
I personally wouldn't rely on it myself just because I'd like to keep everything in-house. I'm not saying they're doing a bad job. I don't know, to be honest. But what I would say is from a governance standpoint and a regulatory standpoint, it's good to have all your ducks in a row, and you can prove to your auditors or your insurance firm or the legal guys that you've done your due diligence and you have observability into every part of your environment, not just the on-prem stuff.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense. And to your point, no matter where your data is, especially in distributed enterprises, multiple offices, multiple endpoints, as you're talking about, that have access to or produce data or upload it or whatever. I mean, the field is pretty broad, isn't it, in terms of the number of things you need to watch out for?
Absolutely. And with, enterprise data centers and enterprise environments being more hybrid, there's always a pathway between the cloud and your data center. So that needs to be secured accordingly.
Yeah. So, I know we've spent a lot of time on security, but now I'll let you get back to your B10K. we talked about that being the number one concern, but as you look at primary storage in general, and your customers specifically, what else are you hearing that they're concerned about these days?
In all honesty, Brian, I only hear a lot from the data protection and cyber resilience world. I mean, the usual concerns are always there, capacity, performance, everything like that. But I think with the improvements with every single B10K release, and whether that's been able to add more compute nodes or being able to expand out with switched architecture, some of those concerns are being alleviated with every single release.
Yeah, and you're talking a lot about good hygiene and preparation and some of the capabilities that B10000 has on the software side, but the hardware too is important. You guys have built obviously security into all the physical elements there too. Does that come up as a concern from a hardware perspective? I know we've seen a lot in the news over the years of, is this hardware compromised? Can it be compromised? I know you've got secure root of trust and supply chain security and a bunch of other things, but that might sound a little like they should be assumed, but I don't know that that's always the case when you look at every device across the data infrastructure.
Yeah, I mean, everything that, we may want to make sure that we're putting out the most secure platforms we can, and that's, from a physical and from a software perspective as well. From a data center security perspective, we hope our customers are doing the right things. and I think that's also why storage has been somewhat lagging behind in the overall security conversation, because as I said, it's not a laptop that can be stolen. It's a big heavy box in the data center. in terms of, you know, the physical access or even logical access to the array operating system itself, again, it all harks back to the exporting the security audit logs, because if you notice anomalous root activity on the array, something's really, really wrong. And you want to be doing something about that straight away.
Yeah, I feel like that's such a basic notion of, you know, if we try a couple logins and it doesn't work, maybe shut that down, automatically report out, and then have
some. It sounds ridiculous to say these basics, but a lot of the times, if you can do the basics really well, it's going to solve a lot of problems, or at least hopefully mitigate.
I don't think it's too rudimentary, because again, it comes back to, I think large organizations have had an advantage, not an advantage exactly, but they've invested the time and the money into these solutions. They understand the attack vectors, they understand the risk, and so they have policies in place. But as smaller organizations, that's why I keep probing on the lower end of the market, is they grow. I mean, they end up in places they never expected. And so what started out on, you know, a NAS or something one day grows into to something else, to something else, to something else. And now you've got multiple systems in place. You have an IT environment that's kind of held together with duct tape and chicken wire sometimes.
And I see some of my lobster.
Yeah. I saw that. That wasn't meant to be a shot at you, but I'm glad you received it. But that's the real world. The real world is not necessarily a starting fresh from a security first perspective. It's applying these technologies and software partners on top of an organization that may not have ever been properly organized. I mean, I think about in the US especially, and maybe it's the same in Europe and elsewhere, the SLED market, the schools. I mean, these guys have been obliterated on the budget standpoint. They're fighting things like hypervisor renewals, where they got especially hurt on pricing there. And they're typically on systems that are just barely held together. And the idea of, yeah, we can restrict access to this room with a HID swipe or whatever, that's like basic step one, right? But we've seen some horrific things with password management, access management. And I just don't want littler or more constrained organizations to think, man, this is so hard, I don't even want to try. Because
I get that completely. And rolling back to the B10K, sorry to keep doing that, but you know, that's what I'm here for. The B10K, even from its lowest kind of 2-node 8-core system, gives you the same fundamental core data protection and cyber resilience capabilities as the biggest B10K out there. You know, the core capabilities don't change. And yes, as organizations grow, you can layer on some like Zerto as that kind of premium upsell grade, AAA, zero RPO, zero RTO, additional layer of protection, and throw in a store once in the bottom for, you know, some cheap and deep. I shouldn't use the term cheap and deep.
Everyone's cheap and deep.
Well, you know, bring in a purpose-built backup appliance to have that kind of off-box storage, or a second array to turn the B10K, a secondary B10K into a vault. It's very, very expansible, and it doesn't have to start big. It can be done with a single array, with immutability, with encryption on the array, with all the security things I've mentioned before. It is really kind of your vault in a box.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that's a fair characterization, and one that makes sense. Because I think no matter what your business is, securing the data, whether it's for AI because you want to be able to enable what's next, or whether it's just good business hygiene of securing and protecting that data. I mean, that's been true forever, but is even more true now with all the compliance that we've talked about. And you did mention something a little while ago that I want to revisit too, with disaster recovery and multi-site deployments. You know, talk a little bit about what you're doing there with B10K, because I think that's interesting in terms of just kind of your latest thinking on offsite copies and you know, sending snaps or whatever else is going on there.
Well, I mean, the basic principles of 3-2-1-1 haven't really changed. So, you know, you want three copies of your data, two sites. I can't remember the exact formats now.
One on a different media or something.
And one on a different site, yeah. But let's say we can use metro clusters within the B10K to transfer that data across long distances. So you've got either a hot site and a cold site, or you could have a active peer persistence across two sites, and then either pulling that off to a separate B10K for using periodic remote copy to kind of act as a vault, or there's the Zerto Cyber Resilience Vault to give that extra level of data protection and air gapped isolation in there as well. Or again, you know, there's a store once offering in there for off array, protected by the catalyst, and again with strong deduplication, so you're getting a lot of data density in there, and immutability and encryption available on that as well.
Yeah, catalyst is pretty sweet. We looked at the DPAN, the data protection accelerator node with.
I need to get my hands on one of those.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what. Taking that and just putting it on its own dedicated server or appliance, if you will, really for like large organizations, it's unbelievable the performance available in that thing. So we've got that too. But that's amazing. But
it brings a conversation. Yeah. Sorry, Brian.
No, go ahead.
I was saying it brings the conversation not to how quick we can back up and how much we can back up, to how quick we can restore as well, because the speeds that thing can do are absolutely mind-blowing.
Well, what's funny about it is when we were doing the restore, what it does is it really puts pressure back on the nodes that are being protected to be well-architected to take that restore, whether it's Fabric that they're connected to, or even as a storage guy, down to the SSDs that they get put in servers or hard drives or whatever, because, you know, big sustained writes is not the easiest workload for some storage, and making sure that you're architecting your key servers so that they're ready for those big writes is important. But yeah, I mean, every time you move a stressor in the IT environment, some other weak point will be exposed. And
it's always the way.
Yeah, often it's Fabric, because I'm happy to blame the network first, like any other storage guy is. But I will admit that there are some other design decisions to be made there to accelerate that on your restores. I mean, this is great. And I think just the walkthrough you did there a moment ago with all the different components and the way HPE is thinking about those now as a customer solution and not necessarily four or five different individual silos is really a great strategy. And the architecture that you guys put together for us to test with was really great too. So I think, again, I'll link to that paper in the description. And even if you're not an HPE customer, just getting a flavor for NIST and how to best think about breaking out your strategies. I mean, skip to the middle and read that part. It's really important.
Absolutely.
For everyone to check out. So where should people go that want to check out your solutions? The B10000 page, and I'm sure you've got plenty of security and ransomware links and documents there.
Absolutely, yeah. There's the B10000 main page. There's a white paper on the ransomware detection feature. We've got a cyber resilience architecture white paper that's similar to what's covered in the storage review paper. And there's SIM integration guides. There's a whole world out there. And I'm trying to get more and more out there as we speak. There's some demo videos on YouTube as well. And I can send you the links for those, and you can put them in the show notes.
Yeah, we'll put them in the notes as well. And absolutely, I strongly encourage people to hit some of these things. You don't even have to be an HPE customer to take some value from this stuff in terms of how you're thinking about it. You guys have done a great job in thought leadership there, and producing content around these solutions. And it's not always light reading, but it's critical reading. And even the small organizations can benefit from this. So
absolutely.
Dan, this is a great chat. I appreciate you doing it. I know it's warm over there and you're in the UK, right?
Yeah, I'm in the UK, based in Birmingham.
And it's the blues out there, and now you're feeling the heat, right? And hopefully you get some respite from that, and you know, keep your eye on the soccer matches this week. It's going to be a fun time to be around.
Yeah. Absolutely, there's a cold beer in the fridge with my name on it. So
fantastic! Yeah, you're 5 hours ahead, so that's perfect.
Absolutely, yeah, it's definitely 5 o'clock here.
Well, thanks for doing this. I appreciate it. I think this information, like I said, is fantastic for any organization, and definitely check out the paper, and we'll link to all Dan's stuff too, so you can check that out. Until next time, thanks for tuning into the podcast.
Thank you, Brian. All the best.